Hello and welcome to another episode of the Talking Heads podcast with me, Lucy Chamberlain.
And me, Saul Walker.
The smell of the spring is in the air. The days are lengthening and the good old British weather brings days of jumpers and gloves or t-shirts and shorts. But whether sun or rain, the 2023 garden season has truly begun.
Spring is the starter gun for many when it comes to the garden. The garden centres and nurseries are full of new plants. Barely a week goes by when the new wave of colour fills the garden from snowdrops through to daffodils and then on to tulips. In our respective gardens, both at work and home, it's all hands on deck as the spring months whistle by.
This podcast brings you along on those horticultural adventures as Saul and I ply our trade, bringing our best laid plans to fruition. Whether toiling in the borders, hiding in the woodland groves, tending the vegetable gardens or enjoying a leisurely drive on our tractors.
So if you want to join that adventure, tune in every week to look into the busy and exciting world of the modern head gardener.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Talking Heads podcast. A solo episode this week. No Lucy, she is on her Easter holidays with her family somewhere particularly exotic in the UK, I'm sure, and I hope she's having a nice time and we'll be back again next week. But as I'm on my own, I thought I'd take a sneaky look out into my back garden at home. So not at Stonelands this week, although it has been a bit of a horrible week down in the West Country. We've had more rain than Noah experienced in the few days on the Ark, I suspect. It's been wet and very muddy and not a great week for being in the garden and getting on with those tasks I needed to in April. But the weather has turned 360 and today it is absolutely glorious blue sky. I'm actually recording this on the day that I will be publishing it. So for once you're getting a up-to-date look at what I'm doing gardening. Usually we record these a few days or maybe a week in advance, so things can change in a few days weather-wise, but today's glorious. It's about 8 o'clock in the morning. Hopefully you can hear the early birds singing. The sun has yet to come over the horizon. I have a south-facing garden, but it's on a slope, which is always interesting because even though it's south-facing, which you might think is quite a sunny aspect, because of the slope behind us, the sun does take a little while just to get over the top of the hill. And therefore, it's not quite as sunny as a north-facing aspect would be on the other side of the hill, which is a bit counterintuitive. But once the sun rises, I get a full flash of sun in the garden. And it can get quite hot in here. I have to be quite mindful that some of the things in pots, especially where they are sitting on the patio, can actually get quite hot. And making sure that they don't dry out too quickly is essential, especially in the summertime. But we are in April. And I want to talk to you about the garden and how it's fared during the winter. Now, for new listeners, my garden splits into two areas, really. The front garden, which is the shadier part, we've got a lovely big oak tree that is over the top of the garden and shades the front garden very nicely, although it's, well, the buds are starting to swell, actually, so it won't be long till we have leaf break on those, bud break. But it shades the garden nicely down there, and that's what I have designed to be a woodland garden. Many people who know me will know that I love shade plants, and I think shade is an awesome opportunity to grow a lot of my favourite plants. At the moment, the erythroniums are all coming through, the dogtooth violets, and they're looking absolutely sensational. We've had the snowdrops earlier in the year, daffodils have come through and gone. I've noticed my Dactyriza orchids are starting to burst through the soil and put on their initial growth, and they will then extend into their lovely purple flowers. But for the moment, the erythroniums are doing their thing, and I will enjoy those for the fleeting weeks that they're in bloom. But mainly what I want to talk to you about is my back garden. So I am an exotics freak. I love plants from those parts of the world that are very remote and exotic. Big leaves, lots of colour. The only downside is that I live on the cusp of hardiness, i.e. lots of these plants are technically tender and may suffer if we have quite drastic weather conditions, so cold, wet, and windy. Now, I live on the southwest coast of the UK, and we're very lucky down here to have a gentle, mild climate. So quite mild winters, but also quite cool summers as well. So we don't get those blistering heat waves that you might get in, say, the southeast or up the east coast. Having said that, last summer was quite a challenge for most of us. But I really want to talk to you about the winter and what has done well here, what hasn't done well, what I am taking good notes from to see for future plantings, and those things that I'm going to have to probably rip out and start again, which is part of the way the exotic garden world lives, really. You know, there are lots of gardens all up and down the country who will grow things that are on that edge of tenderness because of how they look. Massive leaves, beautiful plants. But we have to put up with the fact that they may die in the winter. Lots of us do take a lot of stuff out of our garden and put it under protection. I have two polytunnels and a greenhouse where lots of stuff does go. But I'm of the mind that I want to experiment and see what I can get away with. So there's a lot of stuff that does stay outside for the winter, just to see how we can get on. Now, let's discuss what happened this winter. So it's been a tale of three halves, if that makes sense. In December, November was very pleasant here in the UK. We had quite a mild November, a fair amount of moisture, but it stayed plus 15 for a long time, even right up to the end of the month, which is quite unusual. You know, usually the temperatures fall away towards the end of November. And instead of that sort of gentle rolling into the cold, frigid winter, it just dropped very suddenly. So almost at the start of December, we went down to very, very cold temperatures. And I know that, especially up north, they were very, very cold. So my back garden got to about -3, maybe -4 in some bits. And for those who have been following the podcast, you'll know that's actually quite cold for my back garden. I'm generally a frost-free area, and that's why I can get away with what I grow. But going down to -3 did test a lot of plants, and we'll have a look at the things that I think have survived and done very well, and therefore I will be going forward with, and some that haven't, and some of the mistakes that I probably made, some of the things I should have taken inside. So yeah, December remained quite cold for a good few weeks. Now, on top of that, and not to add a sob story, I also got COVID very badly at the start of December, and therefore couldn't really get out into the garden to do emergency fleecing or take things in or try and at least get some of the plants nearer the house where I've got this sort of heat island effect, which keeps the temperatures up. So unfortunately, I had to leave. Well, I had to watch from my bed as some things did actually turn tail as the cold temperatures came in. Then towards the end of December into January, the temperature sort of got a little warmer. We haven't had a frost in my back garden since really the start of January. I know there'll be a few people shouting at this podcast saying, oh, but we have. I know I've got a friend up near Honiton in East Devon who is in a frost pocket, who's always having a go at me about my warmer climate down here and the things I can grow. But towards January, got a bit warmer. And then really the second half came in February, where it went incredibly dry, sort of very average temperatures, but we didn't have to see a drop of rain in February, to the point where I had to get out and actually start watering some of the plants, especially my Proteaceae collection. They need constant moisture at the roots, even when they're not growing. So I know a lot of people suffered with their evergreens during that dry period. And then again, it turned 360 for March, and we had one of the wettest Marches in the UK for 40 years, and it constantly rained every day, which is another of the sort of down points of being in the West Country. Although we have mild temperatures, we do see a lot of rain down here coming off the Atlantic. And one of the things a lot of tender plants, especially on the dry tropics end and the Mediterranean sort of like sort of subtropical area, they don't like to have too much moisture at the roots. So I had to make sure that lots of them came under the eaves and took on the rain shadow of the house to make sure they weren't getting flooded. So that was sort of the tale of the winter. Cold, dry, and then very wet. Now we're into April, and we seem to be hot. Well, I don't know. The season hasn't really kicked into gear yet. We've had some warm days, but I got to say, in general, the temperatures, especially at night, have remained in low single figures. And I know there's a few people up the country who are just sick of this continuing cold weather and having to fleece their plants all the time because there's an occasional frost. I'm very lucky we haven't had a frost here, but the cold temperatures have meant that the plants aren't really kicking on yet. Having said that, just having a small walk around the garden this morning while I pick up some of the pots. We've had ferocious winds down here in the West Country. Tuesday through Wednesday, we had a yellow warning for a storm. So generally, when that happens, I generally lay some of the pots on their side of the more top-heavy things so that I don't get any damage. So I've been going around the garden this morning and just picking this up. A few more to pick up as we go around on this podcast. And yes, April started windy, quite wet, but I think today is the turning day. We have lovely sun, as I said, coming over the horizon. And it looks like, from looking at the weather forecast, we've got a lovely week ahead. So that's what I call a prime gardening week. This week, I will be gardening my socks off at Stonelands, hopefully getting the veg garden planted up a bit more better. I've got so many onions and still got a few potatoes to plant in and sowings and all kinds of things to do, and in that weather, hopefully this warm weather, the soil will be more amenable to me getting on it and actually working it. We've got a lot of weeding to do as well, so that will be our job at Stonelands. But let's get back to my garden and have a look at exactly what is doing well and what hasn't done well. So I'm going to take you over to the other side of the garden. Right, I'm at the sunniest corner of my garden. It's where the sun is shining at the moment. In fact, actually, since I've come over here, the sun is now above the horizon, so I've got it glaring in my eyes. So I'm going to have to turn around while I look at things, or else I'll be blinded by the sun. And I keep a lot of what I call the more true tropical end of my collection down here. I've got the one polytunnel, which sort of stays a bit warmer than both the greenhouse and the second polytunnel, that is a bit more in the shadier area. And therefore I keep things in here that are a little bit more, I would say, susceptible to those cold temperatures. Even things like zero to minus one, these things will turn tail and just die on you. Now, unfortunately, it is a bit of a scene of devastation. That December did not do well for a lot of things. Having said that, I think it looks worse than it actually is. I'm just going to pick up a pot. There we go. You stay upright. It does look a lot worse than I think it is, apart from one group of plants, which I'll discuss in a second. So one of the things I've been quite impressed with here are my Araliaceae collection. So for those of you who don't know, Araliaceae is the broomrape family, or what ivy is in, so the ivy family in essence, and the common plants you'll see are ivy and fatsia and a few other of the more common Araliaceae, like the tetrapanaxes and pseudopanax. But one of the plants that I'm incredibly invested in at the moment is Brassiaeopsis, which are these amazing leaves that look like a caterpillar's been along and cut chunks out of them, so they look like fingery sort of palmate leaves, which are amazing. And I think there's a few other growers that I know all the way down the south coast and a bit further north that are trying to test out the hardiness of these guys. I have three species. So I've got in front of me here, this is Mitis. I can see Dumicola over there and a new one on me, which I think is Bodinerii. Bodinerii, yes, that came from Tregrayan, Tom Hudson at Tregrayan earlier in the year. Now, I've also forgotten Hispida. God, that's looking actually quite good. Oh, I'm quite impressed with that. Hispida is one of my oldest ones, and it's actually now at about 7 foot. And there's loads of buds on it. Look at that. Oh, that's impressive. Yes, so I should say all of them have buds on. In fact, Mitis at the moment even has a couple of small leaves. So I'm going to put those down as reasonably hardy. When I say reasonably hardy, please take me with a pinch of salt for wherever you are. If you're further west than me in Cornwall, then you'll probably get away with it. If you're a bit more east and northerly, that may not apply to you. But definitely down in my maritime climate garden here, all the Brassiopsis seem to be hardy, which is quite impressive. So I'm going to actually maybe plant those out permanently. That's always the next. So lots of my stuff I keep in pots because I can move them around, can move them into the greenhouse, into the polytunnels, and then I can play around with them in the garden and see where suits them best, both in winter and in the summer. But I think I'm going to actually start planting some things out permanently now that I know that they're a little bit more hardier than I suspect. One of the nice things about the December cold, if you can say that, is that actually it has tested a lot of the plants here, and that is great for me because I will know more about their characteristics in terms of what temperatures they can take. That's not to say that it's a true representation, because if it was a bit drier and you got a bit colder, then they could probably take that. But it probably, if they were a bit wetter at the roots and the root ball froze, then they might actually suffer a little bit more. So it's always a bit of a game of chance with these things, but I'm quite impressed with the Brassiopsis. They look great. Tetrapanax is just starting to put on its new leaves. What else have we got round here? Oh, the bananas. So I'm a big fan of bananas. I've been extolling their virtues for a long time. And I remember 20 years ago when people would wrap them up with complicated chicken wire and hay and all sorts to try and keep them going. I don't do anything of the sort. They just stay outside permanently now, either side of my patio door. I've got the two species that are probably most common, Basju, the hardy Japanese, and I've got Sycamensis from the foothills of the Himalayas. And both of them are growing their socks off. They did lose all their leaves, I will tell you that. So I've got a lot of, hopefully you can hear that. I've got a lot of tidying up to do around. But coming out of the tops, we've got lovely green furled leaves. Apart from maybe the main stem, I might have to cut that back a bit and see how that's doing. On the Basju, this flowered last year, so I've got to take out the flowering stalk. They're monocarpic, so they won't grow after they've flowered on a stem. But I do have a what they call a daughter plant or a pup next to it that has grown to a good 5 foot and hasn't actually stopped growing. It sort of stalled during that cold period, but now I've got a full paddle leaf on it. Unfortunately, it got a bit battered in that wind on Tuesday, so there are a few rips, but fingers crossed that is going to grow away now for the rest of the year. And I think I can see some new green shoots coming from the base, so that'll make a lovely clump. You'll be surprised how quickly they grow as well, 4 or 5 foot in a year, with lovely big green leaves. Bananas are the mainstay, I think, of any exotic garden. Ooh, wait a minute, another pot to pick up. Ooh, there we go. Bananas are the mainstay of the exotic garden for me. And one of the nice things is they also introduce a little bit of shade. So things like my gingers, Hedychium, Zingiber, Cortelaya, Alpina, all these gingers that I'm growing, do actually like a tiny bit of shade. They don't do so well in the blasting sun. And they also like to be quite well watered. So keeping them in that shade means that I don't have to water them so often. So let's take a look at the gingers. I've been running sort of hardiness trials on gingers for quite a while now, a good 4 or 5 years. And there are obviously some that are better than others. There's a lot of dead growth. I've got to get the secateurs out. I'm a bit of a messy gardener. I think today is going to be that day where I really start chopping things down. Most things, what you want to do with things like gingers, colocasias, that will get naturally pruned by the cold, so they're a bit like dahlias. Once the frost comes, their stems will blacken and you just need to chop them down. Actually, personally, I leave them on for the winter because I think that introduces a little bit of protection. But once it gets around to this sort of time of year and you start seeing new shoots come up, then you actually want to start chopping them back and get them ready for the spring and summer growth. I'm just in front of one of my favourite gingers. Now, I go on about this too much, so I apologise for regular listeners, but this is Hedychium Devon Cream, and not only because it's named after my home county, but it is absolutely spectacular. Now, this has been outside in the full blast of the winter, not any protection at all apart from leaving the top growth on, and I can already see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and I can't really see it all because it's covered in rhizomes, 9 shoots already coming out. Solid rhizomes, so get in there, feel the rhizomes. If they're squashy, then those are the ones that have been frosted. But look at that. That is going to be a fantastic plant. Actually, in fact, I might take that to Stonelands and divide it up and get some new plants off that and replant the container, as well as supply some of my friends with some new rhizomes. But Devon Cream has definitely come through that -3, -4 without even blinking. And we'll see how that looks in the summer. Going to head down the garden slightly. So I'm now at my greenhouse. Let's open the door and have a look inside. I have a heater in here that takes the edge of the frost off. So two of my polytunnels I have heaters in, and one of them I leave as what I just call a cold polytunnel. It will frost in there if it gets very cold, but it generally keeps the temperatures about 2 to 3 degrees sort of warmer than the outside conditions, so it generally doesn't frost as much. The only problem I have with a greenhouse at this time of year is when the sun comes up and really starts beating down, the temperature can change. Let's just have a look. I've got a little thermometer in here. Let's have a look. At the moment, it's at 8 degrees C. That will go up to something like 25, between 30, if I don't regulate and get all these vents open. So I'm going to leave the door open now. It might get a little colder because it's about 6 degrees outside at the moment. So we'll see. But by the time that sun starts shining, the temperatures can wildly swing up to 20 degrees. And you just got to be careful. If you're growing things in greenhouses at this time of year, just be careful of those temperature swings, because they can do a lot of damage to plants that haven't really got used to hot and the blazing sun. Things can get sunburned, as I found with a few orchids last year. You get these sort of white spots appearing on the leaves of orchids where they've been sunburned. But I'll get in here and I'll start sorting through the pots. I've got a couple of succulents that haven't done so well. I find it quite hard to keep succulents and some more of the tropical plants together, because of the fact that they just need slightly different conditions. Succulents generally need it a little bit drier and a little less humid. So what I might do for this year, I'm thinking, is I might actually create a shelf high up in, I've seen this done elsewhere, high up in the greenhouse, where I can put the succulents and literally just leave them for the winter. They'll get good light up there during the winter, and hopefully won't suffer so much from the humidity of all the other leafier plants around them. But the aeoniums are doing quite well. It's things like the echeverias not looking so happy, and more the rosette forming things. But yeah, there we go. That's my greenhouse. We'll get in there, sort through the mess that is. Let's get on to something that hasn't worked, shall we? We don't like to hide our failures here on the Talking Heads podcast. Brugmansia. Now, I've left a lot of them outside because for a couple of years I've had Grand Marnier, which is a Suaviolens type. Suaviolens type that's been planted out. And for about 3 years, that's done quite well. It's got to about 10, 12 foot. Well, it's not going to grow any more this year. All of them that I have left out or have been in the colder polytunnel have absolutely bit the bullet. Shrunk bark, you can see I could just strip it off. There's nothing there. It's rotten, sort of, you know, horrible sludge underneath. Now, I'm gonna go with the silver lining. This is Lucy's influence on me. Always look at the silver lining in anything you're doing. One thing I have seen in the past with Brugmansia that I have left out and have succumbed to losing all their top growth is you can actually get a growth starting from the root plate just underneath the soil. And I'm actually going to say this to all of you who have suffered, whether it's on your exotics or your normal evergreens that are usually pretty hardy, don't throw them out, don't cut them away and dig them up quite yet. The growing season has just started, things are just starting to show a little bit of of growth, and you'll be surprised exactly what will come back. And actually, I'm going to head down the garden past the coal polytunnel. We'll come back to that, to a plant that I dismissed earlier in the year, or early in the winter, I should say, because I thought that's it. And that is my Sparmania africanus, which is a... Well, it is a very tender plant. Unfortunately, mine was too big to put in the polytunnel this year. What's that, about 9 foot. So I left it out, and overnight, that first frost absolutely obliterated black leaves, black stems. Now I'm standing here, and it is riddled with new growth. Lower down in the canopy, so I'm probably going to have to chop away some of the stems that are coming a bit further up. But look at all the little growths that are occurring. And that's fantastic. I'm very impressed with actually the hardiness of this plant. I was convinced this would be one of the goners. You know, it comes from that more sort of subtropical, tropical area of Africa. And I thought it would succumb to the frost, but obviously not. And the one thing I know about this plant is it's very quick growing. So within, say, by about July, this will be full of leaf again and probably as high as it has been. So it's quite interesting. Would that be hardy? Is that semi-hardy? I don't know how you would classify that. You know, if you look at the plant now, you would say that is not hardy. It looks awful. But actually, with this new growth, I would classify that as being hardy to semi-hardy, and I'm quite happy to try leave that out now and see how that does for next winter as well. We shall see, but I'm really pleased to see that growing. Right, let's head back to the third polytunnel. This is my unheated polytunnel, where I keep some more of the sort of Mediterranean plants and a few more of the Araliaceae. Oh, look at that. I've got lovely Schefflera taiwania that's just starting to put its new growth. Lovely new growth on Schefflera. A bit like the Fatsias. Lovely new growth in all different colours. It's got red tinge to its leaf. That needs a new pot. It's going to get quite large this year. Generally, everything looks pretty good. I keep my ensets in here, all my sonchus, the woody sow thistles. I keep all my cyathea ferns in here. They are all looking fantastic. One thing isn't looking. I've got two mountain papayas in here as well. And actually the top actually looks like it's died out. But it's more solid down the stem. So I might have to just cut the top out of that and see what comes. It might multi-stem. I always like plants when they multi-stem and don't go up in one singular stem. A couple of the Brugmantias not looking too hot. Which one's that one? Let me have a look. That is Sunsport, which is a variegated number. That does not look good. We'll have to sort that out later. But generally, things looking quite nice. And some things are even putting on new growth. Oh, there's a flower bud. Oh, wow. A flower bud on Brugmantia mubisu, which is one of my earliest flowering Brugmantias. I'm quite impressed with that. I've also got, and I got this last year, I can't remember if it was from Mike Clifford. I think it might have been Mike down in Poole. Raphidophora peepla, which is a, well, it's a philodendron. So most of you might grow philodendron as a houseplant inside, a climbing plant with these interesting leaves. This one, this species, is hardy and has now been in the unheated polytunnel for the whole winter. And literally, there's no effect on the leaves at all. They are glossy, they're big. I tell you what, it's one of those plants where you look at it and you think, there's no way that's going to be hardy. That has got to be a houseplant, but no. So I'm hoping to grow that up the side of my house at some point and really try it in the outdoor conditions. Right, let's just go quickly over to the Proteaceae collection. I've been trying Proteas now for about 3 years, and I'm having mixed success. That's what I'm going to say. I think they're fantastic plants, fantastic flowers. They're mostly from Australia and South Africa, although there are a few in South America as well. And as a group of plants with weird and wonderful foliage, and well, the Proteas have these amazing flowers as well, as you all know, if you've been to places like Tresco or down to the west of Cornwall. So I've been growing quite a collection at the moment. Now, here's the mixed success. So Protea, the species, has not done as well as I hoped. I've lost quite a few in the winter. And I don't think this was down to the cold. I think this was due to that dry period in February where I just didn't get out and water in time. They do like to have moisture at the roots all year round. And I think some of them have just succumbed to being getting a bit too dry in that February mini drought, as I'm going to call it. So that's not good. Banksia, on the other hand, which is the Australian. So Protea is a South African. Australian are the Banksia. They are doing fantastic. I've got a really beautiful Banksia, which is, I think, sometimes called the Ball Banksia, or the Big Banksia, Banksia grandis. There's a cone coming. And I know the cone on Banksia grandis gets to, well, it can get to a foot if it's growing well, but this one will probably get to about half a foot in size. Lovely little indumentum. Indumentum? Am I saying that right? I'll spell it for you later. On the new cone. It's actually quite cute. But I know it'll get into a big cone and look quite grand, as the species epithet says. The other plant I have lost, which I'm actually very sad on, and I was hoping it would pull through, but it's not. It's now losing its leaves. It's Leucodendron argenteum, or one of the South African's famous silver trees. Again, I don't think this was down to the cold, because by the end of December, it was still looking fine. I think this was down to the drought in February and me just not getting out and watering, which you don't think you have to do in February, do you think? Especially in the West Country, you think there's going to be rain. So I'm going to have to get a new one of those and try that again. I'm always a sucker for trying things three or four times before I give up. As anyone will know with aloe polyphylla, the spiral aloe that I've tried to grow every year and I've successfully killed every year. So I've now sort of semi-given up on that. Although, if I do see one at a plant fair this year, the sadist in me will go and buy one and get it. Anyway, that's sort of going through some of the plants that are looking good and looking bad. As I sort of said, this time of year is quite tempting when you're out in the garden to dismiss things that are looking quite poorly as not alive. But I would say you've got a good month, maybe two, maybe by the end of May into June. If you don't see any growth or anything happening then that's the time to get rid of them. Don't get too gung-ho on it. Leave things and see how they're doing. The other way to do it, and this is great because I'll be right into my repotting season now, especially the gingers, splitting things up, putting them into bigger pots, seeing how things have grown and sort of... I'm trying to put a lot of things more into terracotta to give them a little bit more weight, because one of the problems with plastic, although cheaper and good for recycling through smaller plants, is that they don't tend to anchor the plants on the ground and things do tend to fall over. But as you are repotting, just check out what's going on in the root plate or on the rhizomes or the corms or whatever it is under the ground, because that's where you really will know if things are growing or not. If those things are squishy and dead and smell rotten, then you probably are onto a loser. But if they're still quite solid, you'll be surprised what will still grow, even waiting all the way till June to actually put on some new growth. So anyway, I'm going to leave you here because the sun's come up and I want to start getting on with some gardening. I've got some pressure washing to do as well to get this patio looking sparkly clean. I hope you all have a nice gardening week. The weather's going to be fantastic in the UK. So I think it's time to get out your trowels and your spades and your weeding knives and all that and get out in the garden and enjoy a bit of the sun, get a bit of vitamin D in you. And me and Lucy will be back next week, where I'm sure we'll hear about her lovely holiday, and we'll bring you some of the more of the highlights from our actual working gardens, and hopefully come back to my back garden again in a couple more months when things are really starting to grow. So enjoy yourself and happy gardening.
That brings us to the end of today's episode. We hope you enjoyed listening and look forward to you joining us again for the next instalment. If you'd like to contact myself or Lucy, we're free to chat on our social media platforms. I'm on Twitter at Gardening Saul, and Lucy is on both Twitter and Instagram at HeadGardenerLC. Any review you'd like to leave via your podcast provider would be gratefully received.
The Joy of Spring in the Head Gardener's Heart is an exciting bookend to the start of many months of gardening, making the horticultural world in which we live and work both exciting and fulfilling. So join us every week as we sow seeds, mow lawns, do a little or a lot of weeding, and bring you, our loyal listeners, a peek behind our gardening curtains.
And so, until the next episode of Talking Heads,
goodbye!